Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 66 of Magic FM. I'm Gabby Spartz, one of your hosts today, and I'm joined by Mashi Scanlon, dressed as Chewbacca today. Actually, that way.
Thank you very much. That's from our holiday party a few years ago. We didn't have one this last year. Tears. We do like a gift exchange, like a blind gift exchange. And I always list Star Wars as one of my interests. And someone gave me that and I like immediately changed into it at the game center. So, we've been having some, Gabby and I were just talking about this. We're having some internet issues at the warehouse, and we had internet issues at our old warehouse too. You know, new state, new warehouse, same issues.
It's crazy to me that like, I remember how many issues we had at the old warehouse. And then finally it's like, okay, new warehouse, don't worry. We'll figure it out. And we eventually figured out the audio issues, but it was bad for like, I don't know what, 6 episodes there or something.
Oh, yeah. It was kind of like log in and cross your fingers, right?
Yeah.
The old days.
Hope today's the day.
Yeah, it's like the old days of Magic FM. I'm here. We're doing tons of box breaks. So I'm here in the Henderson warehouse to stream. I will say this, Gabby, one of the things that's awesome about this being out here, besides seeing everyone in the warehouse and all that, is there's this place called Carlitos Burritos, and it's New Mexican style.
Carlitos Burritos? I like the name.
Carlitos Burritos. It's great. Yeah, it's New Mexican style Mexican food, and they have like chili adobado, chili verde. It's really good. Mm. But what I love the best is they make in-house sopapillas, which are delicious.
Sopapillas. Oh my God, I love them so much.
I know. And they give you honey, and then they make these cinnamon sugar sopapillas, which are I will just devour as many as you put in front of me. So
they're
super
so good. Sopapillas, so for good. Those who don't know, it's basically just like kind of like fried tortillas. It's like a Mexican dessert. And usually you'll eat them with just like a little bit of honey. And they are delicious. So
they are so
I
good.
Highly
they
recommend so if you good. See sopapillas somewhere out there, if you go to a Mexican restaurant or something, definitely give them a shot. They're really delicious. I mean, it's like the equivalent of having funnel cake, right? It's just like fried dough, essentially.
It's fried dough. Yeah, it's just fried dough, but it's so good. And when it's done well, it's like light and airy. And then when you get in, it's still hot, a little bit of honey or that cinnamon and sugar. So I'm excited. I'm super stoked to be back here.
That's really cool.
As always, it's just the food for me. But so how are you doing, Gabby? Any big news recently?
Big news, actually. How about we share them? So it's funny. I feel like the podcast would have found out a little earlier, but we're on the monthly schedule, so haven't really had a chance to mention it yet. But Luis and I are expecting. Yay!
It is so awesome.
We're super stoked. I am 16 weeks pregnant today, and we know it's a baby boy. So I'm due, I think, October 21st, and we're just very happy to share the news. But this was something that we'd been working towards, and we're very happy that it's all working out. So very exciting. The first trimester was pretty rough. Not gonna lie, it was really miserable. Yeah. But actually, like, one of the cool things that's been happening now, Mashi, is like I just had a ton of like nausea and vomiting and just like food aversions and just fatigue and lethargy and just didn't want to like do anything. But now that I'm in the second trimester, it's actually been like I'm enjoying food again. I like have energy to do things again, and it's been like pretty nice to just feel like a little bit more like myself, because I'm usually like a pretty high energy person.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
So I'm just glad it's public, because I was extremely lucky, because you and Luis told me about it early on.
Yeah.
And I was like, now I must totally forget this knowledge so I don't accidentally say something somewhere. And so like finally when you announced, I was like, oh, thank
you're like,
God,
okay, I don't have to bear the burden anymore.
Yes, but obviously, congratulations. I'm so happy
thank
for everybody
you.
Is so happy. Like everyone who saw this message, both in our internal Slack, with the team here, and, obviously out on social media, it's just been an overwhelmingly positive response, as it should be.
It's been really cool. It was also really funny because like right around the same time, there were like 3 other people in the CFP Slack who are also expecting kids like exactly around October. So it was just like pregnancy announcement, another pregnancy announcement, all back to back. I was joking with Dennis and I was like, I low-key wanted to come into the Slack chat with like a picture of Slowpoke the Pokemon and just be like, I heard we're announcing pregnancies.
it's true though. Our New Zealand team message like, what do you guys have in the water over there? Like, what is going on? Everybody's just getting pregnant. So
yeah,
it's true. A lot of future team CFBers drop in here.
Yeah, we're We're building our two HG Commander Pot, you know. Naya's on her way. She's very excited about being a big sister. And we've got the 2HG team ready to go.
It's awesome. By the way, I shout out to the mild Nakadal. She was so patient in the backseat of a car where Luis, we were all on a Zoom call and it went a little bit long, and she was super patient and super good. And it was awesome. And at some point, Luis was like, okay, hey, you know, we've gone long enough. Naya's been really good. I need to get off the call. Yeah. We're going to get a cake pop at Starbucks. But shout out to the mild Nakadal. She totally entertained herself and was great. So great job, Naya.
Yeah, she's five now, and she definitely has gotten to an age where she does now know, like, if there's a Zoom call or like a meeting, she does have to try to be patient. But also, that amount of time is like so much for a five-year-old.
Yeah. And you've got to reward it. You've got to be conscious. Luis did it all right. He's like, okay, we've gone long enough. I need to get off this call now.
I need to go.
Right. You know, you can't expect too much. That's unreasonable. So, yeah. But it was funny because she was just in the back seat the
just
whole
chilling.
Time.
You know, yeah.
They were parked. Yeah.
That's really funny. Anyway, we've got a lot of Magic news. There was a huge announcement with a ton of, like, a stream yesterday with a ton of news and things. So we want to get to all of that. But before we get into the news, I did want to do a shout out for channelfireball.com, the sponsor of our podcast. Right now is a great time to sign up to CFB Pro. There's just been awesome articles coming out. Level ups, deck guides, deep dives. I know right now there's an article by Luis on just how to play sealed better, which is very convenient because there's a sealed arena open this weekend. You can win $2,000 by playing that event if you make day two, and then, like, I think get 7 wins or something. People love playing in those. I find them pretty fun. Do you think you might play, Mashi?
I think I might. I have to say, the combination of LR and Ben and Ethan on Lords Unlimited talking about sealed really pulled me into it. And so I have a pool, and I'm actually, oh man, I'm not playing at college. I don't have a pool for this event. I opened a pool just to practice, and it's an Azorius pool. And so
I
feel like I'm doing it wrong, you know, but I'm super stoked on it. And for anyone who's really engaged with Limited, which obviously the LR and the Lords of Limited audience is, I think this is just so good. Having some competitive outlet for Limited players is great. I think the Arena team is doing a great job with that. And honestly, like, I hate to pay the devil his due, but Luis's deep dives, like he did this last time for Sealed, they are so good. Like, if you're going to play in this event, honestly, it's worth the $5 just to read this article. The insights that are in there are amazing.
They're really good.
No BS.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, they're really good. And I mean, there's stuff that's coming out there for like all formats, right? There's stuff, interesting stuff coming out there about, there's like reactions about like the announcement that happened yesterday. There's deck dives and deep dives that just teach you how to play better or play against a specific archetype or like play better for like the sealed event. So right now is a really good time to join CFB Pro. Remember, if you do join CFB Pro and you use the code MAGICFM, you can also directly support this podcast. So if you're already there, we would very much appreciate it.
And I have one other thing, Gabby. I know we talked about this a little bit. And look, I feel like we do a ton. And we're always trying to I feel like our mood, our theme in this podcast is to be giving and to help others. I did get contacted by Dennis Strange. I work with Dennis, right? He's part of the marketing team here. Of course, Dennis and Riley, they have their own podcast called Scry Me a River. And they really want to grow their listenership, and they're trying to get out there and grow and be active about it. So Dennis actually messaged me about sponsoring Magic FM as a kind of way to get the word out and have us endorse them. And they put big money on the line. And I told them, look, you know, we'll talk about smarts, fine, but they want it to be a sponsorship. They're taking all the money, and I'm not joking, all the referral money they have, they're trying to give it to us to sponsor Magic FM. I don't know if it's a power move, if that's supposed to be a power move or not, but Dennis, I want to help you guys. And so I kept turning down the money. They kept trying to send money, and I actually got a check in the mail, Gabby. I'm not joking, but here, I want everyone to hear this. Your money's no good here, Dennis, Riley, your money's no good here. Ripping that up. I do want all of our Magic FM listeners to check out Scry Me a River. They're a fledgling podcast, and they're trying to grow. They are now this sponsoring Magic FM. So, you know, we'd really appreciate it if you gave them a listen and gave them a try. Shout out to Dennis and Riley. They're really hustling here, trying to get this thing off the ground. So good luck to Scry Me a River, now an official sponsor of Magic FM. So there we go.
I really like it, Mashi. This is very much in the spirit of Magic FM. We're just giving back to the community.
Yeah, and it's a free, you know, I know that, look, there were 3 zeros on this check I just ripped up, Gabby. But, you know, but we're not about that. We're not about, I just want to help. I want to help a young, fledgling, smaller podcast get their feet under them. So it's worth doing.
I like it. We're just giving back to the community. It's great. Anyway, on to the magic news. There was a magic stream on the Wizards channel yesterday, and it was an hour long, but it just came with like news for basically the entire summer and what to expect for Modern Horizons 2, which is the next coming set, what to expect for Adventures in the Forgotten Realms, which is the equivalent of the core set of what would happen in the summer, and then just other miscellaneous announcements and things that they had. So I thought what would be cool is we just kind of like go through the big stuff that happened, because if you didn't watch that stream, they really dropped a ton of news. Like a lot of these things could have been just like an article that they released on any random day, on any given day, and that would have been like a news thing itself. So they just really kind of like jam-packed everything into the stream. The first thing they showed, and this is all related to Modern Horizons 2, is they confirm that the 5 enemy fetch lands are going to be in the set. You know, those are very coveted because pretty expensive lands. You definitely need them if you're playing any sort of eternal format. So being able to get access to those is a pretty big deal.
And I mean, there's not a lot of them out there. They're very high value items because they're short printed. I want to look, we give Wizards... it's not even you and I. I don't think we give them the worst time. As a community, we can be pretty hard on them. I thought that we were going to see enemy fetches like this come back as a secret layer. Seeing them in a product released like this, Moho 2, Modern Horizons 2, available at local game stores and all that, I'm so happy they did that.
Me too.
I just, you know... Because you could see this being, you could totally see this being a very high value secret layer, right? Old border fetches, secret layer, enemy fetches, oh my God.
And so, that just seems that to me seriously does scream secret lair. And I mean, we've talked about secret lairs a lot on this podcast. I think both you and I are like not super high on them in general. So seeing this come as part of the set, and especially they are gonna make them available as old border fetch lands, that's something that you're more likely to see in like collector's boosters, for example. But they look really darn cool. And it's something I would have expected in a secret lair.
Yeah, I think it's a great thing. And just like the fact the old border thing is coming back too, because that was one of the best things about Time Spiral Remastered. I thought that was amazing, and I'm so happy to see that trend continue.
Yeah, that was really cool. So on top of the old border fetchlands being, on top of fetchlands being available in old border, there are also going to be other cards in Modern Horizons 2 that will be available in old border too. So Blake Rasmussen, who was one of the hosts for the stream, they had sourced questions from the chat ahead of time. And one of the questions was, are old border cards here to stay? And it's interesting because we've talked about this a lot, right, Mashi? Mm-hmm. And they said basically, we don't know for sure. We do know that people really like them. So that's why we're bringing them back here in Modern Horizons 2. And we generally like doing things that people like. So if you like them, let us know, because we're paying attention. So if you're into the old border stuff, and you have a way of like letting Wizards know, whether that be on social media or wherever you're going to make magic posts, not a bad thing to relay, right? They are paying attention to this sort of stuff.
Blake, if you're listening, I love old border cards. Please keep doing them.
Yes, I love them too. They're so cool.
they're so great. I will say this. This is just a moment of seriousness here. Boomer, you know, I'm a magic boomer. And back in the day, we used to say this all the time, post-Onslaught. Channel Fireball president and CEO John Sasso used to say, one of the first signs of the magic apocalypse would be enemy fetch lands. And then all of a sudden, Zendikar came. And it turned out to be the best thing, because Magic was in this lull, right? And then Zendikar came and it pulled it out. Like, Shards wasn't a good set. Shadowmoor, Lorwyn, they were very low. They weren't very popular. But Zendikar with the enemy fetches. But it was kind of like the first sign was enemy fetches, and the second sign was breaking reserve list. So I don't know if this is it. This could be another sign of the magic apocalypse. I tend to not think so.
Breaking the reserve list. Yeah, that's a whole
breaking can the reserve list is scary. Yeah,
that is a whole can of worms. I mean, we talked about that on the podcast at some point in the past. We've talked about it. And maybe what would happen if the reserve list did get broken.
And how to do it. That's the big thing. But this is super exciting. The other big thing that they announced here, Gabby, is Counterspell. Good old 2-mana counter target spell, blue, is coming to Modern. And it, you know, we'll have it in one of these old border slots, it sounds like. But what do you think about Counterspell in Modern?
Yeah, that was a big announcement. This was one of the things that I was like, hey, this could have just probably been its own article because it's kind of like an interesting thing. I'm very interested to hear what like some of the constructed podcasts, aka maybe some constructed resources out there, think about this. But I actually think it's fine. I think this is a fine counterspell to have in Modern. I think generally speaking, control in Modern is just not really where the format's at. The format's pretty fast. It has a lot of combo. It has a lot of discard and things like that. So I know Counterspell is like one of the best counters, period. But I am not. I think it can slot into Modern fine and I wouldn't worry too much about it. How do you feel about it?
I don't play enough Modern to know. I tend to think that I 100% believe Counterspell is safe in Modern. I also think there's a ton of things on the ban list that are also safe in Modern, you know?
Yeah.
So I think that being more aggressive with unbanning and adding things to the format is good. I will say, I would love to hear Constructed Resources, maybe special guest Reed Duke, the Modern Master, the Maven of Modern, you know?
That would be very cool.
Yeah, I'd love to hear his take on it. But this is one of the, again, this is almost a boomerish announcement where I'm sure a lot of young players, new players they don't really play with Counterspell, right? Like, right. They're like, what's the big deal? Whereas, you know, you and I were like, oh my God, Counterspell. This is unbelievable. And I do think as boomers, we're going to feel so stupid. We're like, yeah, great. Counterspell's back. Big whoop. Does nothing.
Yeah, it does nothing. I mean, to give you an example, there's been a few cards that they've unbanned in Modern and everybody lost their minds every time it happened. Like, this is going to break the format. This is the worst thing that's ever happened. I can't believe it. How could Wizards do this? And then time and time again, those cards didn't do anything. Stoneforge Mystic got unbanned. Nothing happened. Bitter Blossom got unbanned. Nothing happened. Jace the Mind Sculptor got unbanned. Literally nothing happened. So
yeah, and this isn't like, these cards get unbanned for context, and then everybody actively tries to break them, right? Like, it's not like they get unbanned and no one tried. Someone's like, oh my God, Bitter Blossom's legal, fairies, right? It just went nuts with it. So, I mean, because I remember Cheon was one of them. Cheon was still playing. He wasn't a Wizard yet when they unbanned Bitter Blossom, I don't think.
Oh, is that true?
I remember him just playing tons of fairies at the time, trying to break Bitter Blossom in Modern. So, yeah, it's, you know, it's a cool thing. It counters, I mean, classic cards like Counterspell should get played in formats where they're safe to get played. Like, I think this is a really, really good thing. There's an awesome Mystical Archive Counterspell in Strixhaven. So I think all of that is great, and I'm happy to see it happening.
One of the things that happened in Modern also, Mashi, is that the ban list that was created for it were a lot of decks that were Boogeyman decks in their standard format. So Fairies in Standard was just like one of those decks where it was so overpowering, so much stronger than anything else that was going on in that format. The Jace Mind Sculptor decks, same thing. Stoneforge Mystic with Batterskull and like Cobblade and stuff, same thing. And so when these decks or these cards got banned, it kind of made sense given like where the power level was at and how things were at the time, because Modern got made. Then there was like a little community cup tournament. A bunch of decks got made out of that community cup tournament. And then a lot of the bans happened because of that as well. So at the time, it made sense for all these things to get banned. But like Modern's a huge format now. A lot of these cards get unbanned and it's not like, oh, Cobblade in its small standard format. It's like Cobblade in its very large Modern format. And so it's not as broken as you would expect.
Right. The context for how these bannings happen is super important. You're right. Because they were preemptive bans. They weren't, these weren't cards that were out in the wild of Modern going, oh my God, this is strangling Modern. Let's get them out of here.
Right.
It was, let's not repeat the sins of the standard past. Right.
They're just cards that people didn't want to be playing against because they were sick and tired of playing them in standard. And they were not fun to play against in standard. So it was just like, yeah, let's get, they're just out. All they go. They all go.
Yeah. And actually, I don't think it was a bad thing. It helped really drive a lot of hype for Modern, right? Because it's like, I'm sick of losing to Cobblade. I'm sick of, you know, mm-hmm. playing, you know, fairies all the time. Oh, I don't even have to worry about that here. Great, I'm in. So, you know, I don't think it was a bad decision at the time. Time to revisit it. Maybe
totally
get some of those cards back in.
It's funny because part of the context for Modern as well is that at some point it was created to be like a bigger standard. Now Modern is an enormous format, right? Like, the card pool for Modern is gigantic, but at some point it was like a pioneer, right? The idea was that you could play with the last cards from the last 10 years or something.
Right, right.
And now enough time has passed that Modern is no longer that format where like, oh, my cards are no longer good in Standard. Where do I take them? Oh, I know, I'll take them to Historic or I'll take them to Pioneer. Modern is its own thing now.
Yeah, and those cards that just rotated out, they're probably not good enough for Modern anymore.
Absolutely.
Right? It's not like it does not scratch that itch. It's not like you're like, oh, you know, when Kaldheim rotates out, you're not going to see it. You know what I mean? It doesn't work that way. It's too big. It's too powerful.
The delta between the power levels is just like very wide between the two.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You know, it's at that eternal, you know, format level where it's like one or two cards per set maybe
make it into
are good
the
enough
format.
To play.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So.
Super interesting. Along with the news of Counterspell coming to Modern is that every Modern Horizons 2 pack is going to have one slot dedicated into it that's going to be old reprints that are new to Modern. So basically, through Modern Horizons 2, Wizards is inserting a lot of cards into Modern, but they are cards that exist outside, like they already existed. Like Counterspell is an example.
Which is great. Using this as a way to reprint cards into the set, make them legal in the format selectively is awesome. It's exactly what I think they should be doing with sets like this, because you don't what they can't do is do something like, okay, well, let's see, Tempest has Counterspell or Mercadian Mass has Counterspell in it. We'll make Mercadian Mass legal in Modern. It doesn't work that way because you're letting in too much stuff. You know, you want to be selective with what you do. I love Modern Horizons so, and this is what Modern Masters was to some degree, but I love Modern Horizons so much because they approach it with this intention of what are we going to inject into Modern? And oh, by the way, let's make some new cards too. And right. that's like the chef's kiss. That's exactly what they need to be doing.
It is really cool. It's a very cool way to selectively put cards into in a way that's not that confusing, actually, because you know, one of the gripes that you and I talk about Historic all the time is because there's all these Historic anthologies, it's impossible to know what's legal in the format. Mm-hmm. You actually kind of remember, because this is a draftable set and people are going to go out and play it, they will remember the cards that were legal in this format. So it's not confusing that it was just like cherry picked out of Magic's history. They were all in a set together. Then it makes sense. Versus Historic anthologies, like, okay, I guess Pack Rat's legal in the format. I had no idea. There's no way of knowing.
Yeah. Who knows, right? Yeah. Yeah. Phyrexian Obliterator's in. Great.
Yeah. So. Cool. Platinum Angel. I guess. I don't know why anyone would play it. So that is a cool way of getting new cards into the format. I thought it was a pretty cool announcement. There's 42 cards that are legal outside of Modern that are now being inserted into Modern that way. That will be in that spot.
Modern Horizons 2 hype.
I know. I'm excited. They also showed some pretty weird cards. They previewed some really strange cards. Those are like some of the new cards for Modern that are coming in via Modern Horizons 2. Did you get a chance to like look at these, Mashi? Like Diamond the Lion versus Saga?
I saw those two. And it's a Diamond Lion old border too. I love it. Diamond Lion is a two colorless, 2/2. Tap, discard your hand, sacrifice Diamond Lion, add 3 mana of any one color, activate only as an instant.
So basically, and it's a 2-mana 2/2 artifact creature. So this is LED on a stick. Like it's a permanent LED. So really...
No, you have to sacrifice it.
Oh, you do sacrifice Diamond Lion. Oh, interesting.
Yeah, you have to sack it. Yeah.
Okay, I see. That does change things. Wow, okay, so this is much more vulnerable than a regular LED because you are putting it on a creature, so dice removal.
Yeah. And I mean, I don't know how the wording on LED works. You have to sacrifice your hand before you get the mana here.
Correct. So usually the way it would work if you're playing something like Cube is you would sack the LED in response to something you put on the stack. So you put something on the stack, sack LED, you get the mana, discard your hand, you have nothing in your hand, but your spell's still on the stack and it's resolving. And it doesn't matter if it's a sorcery because you can sack it at instant speed, right? So then by the time you finish like resolving that, your Yawgmoth's Will goes off, and now everything in the yard is available, plus you have the 3 mana from an LED you just sacked. So that's the way works.
So there's no madness enabling here.
No, I don't think.
Or you put madness on the stack and it waits and you get your mana first. I don't know how it works. I don't play Legacy.
No, I don't think. Okay, I am not an expert on this. I just know this from like my cube interactions. I don't think it works that way, because you have to discard your hand, so then you sack the LED, then you make the mana.
Then you get the mana. Got it.
I mean, I guess if like something gets discarded and trigger goes on the stack, maybe you get a chance to respond. But I will need a judge to say that for me. That piece is a little too advanced for this Gooby.
But what do we think here about the Diamond Lion? Diamond Paws, baby.
It's cool because LED is not legal in Modern. So this is like a... This is a cool...
Did we think we needed an LED in Modern?
I don't know. Blake Rasmussen was like, yo, I thought our R&D was crazy when they told me this was going to be in the set.
It's like, you know what we need in Modern? We need a Lion's Eye Diamond. You know, and then someone said, we don't need the Lion's Eye. We need the whole lion. Yeah.
I don't know. It's this is one of those cards that's like either going to be really good and like break the format, or it's going to not be good enough because it happens to be a creature. And I don't know. It costs 2, so like it not being free is a big deal. Like the whole point of LED and the reason it's so cool is because LED is a 0 mana artifact that you can immediately sack and do all that stuff with.
Mm-hmm. They seem to be having a lot of fun with this set, because the next card we're going to talk about is Urza's Saga, which is pretty crazy. But before we do that, Gabby, do you know who did the art for Diamond Lion?
It was Howard Lion. Oh, I love it.
So Diamond Lion is a callback to Lion's Eye Diamond with art by Howard Lion. Like, I just feel like they're getting a little cheeky in Modern Horizons 2. And I love it. I'm in for it. Sign me up. Let's go. So it just has that feel of a set that R&D and Wizards is having fun with.
Yeah. No, I get the feeling too. I am excited for the set. I mean, the last Modern Horizons 1 obviously led to a ton of stuff getting banned, but it was kind of cool that there was a lot of cool stuff in that set for it to all get banned in the first place, right?
Well, and you know my stance. Print aggressive and ban aggressively.
Yeah, ban aggressively.
Like, I'm fine with it. Like, that's okay with me. Push the barriers. Sometimes we go too far, but then we have the ban hammer. I know not everyone's for that. I get it. But that's my motto, because I'm in it for the gameplay, and I want those boundaries to get pushed. So.
Yeah, no, I think that's cool.
I mentioned Urza's Saga. Why don't you talk us through Urza's Saga, Gabby?
Oh my god, okay, so this one's a weird one, and we're not really going to dissect everything that's going on in this land, because honestly, this is like above our pay grade.
Yes.
But this is kind of, I think they previewed this to kind of give you a feel that there are really different, wild, kind of weird things coming with Modern Horizons 2, and they weren't joking. So this card's called Urza's Saga. It's an enchantment land called Urza's Saga. So that's already weird, because, you know, we're used to seeing sagas, but they're usually a sorcery. They're usually an enchantment
that
works
enchantment,
on like at sorcery speed, basically. And it procs on your main phase, or at the beginning of your main phase. So this one is Urza's Saga, adds tap, add colorless mana to your mana pool. So that's the first chapter. Chapter 2 is Urza's Saga gains pay 2 and tap. Create a 0/0 colorless construct artifact creature token with this creature gets +1/+1 for each artifact you control. So on the second chapter, you get to make a construct equal to your number of artifacts for 2 mana. And then the third chapter is search your library for an artifact card with mana cost 0 or 1, put it into the battlefield, then shuffle. And that's the card. And then you sack it. So after that, it's just done being like, so you're basically putting this on, you're enchanting a land for it to do this. And at the end, that enchantment just falls off.
Yeah.
It's really weird.
No. It's not an enchant land. It's an enchantment land. It is a land. Like, you can pillage this thing.
Oh, you're right. This is a land itself. You're right. It's an enchantment land. Okay.
Yeah.
But it does sacrifice after chapter 3.
I have to imagine it does. That's how these work.
It says on the text, as the saga enters the battlefield, after your draw step at a lore counter, sacrifice after three. So it's a land that's gone after a little bit, and after doing a bunch of stuff.
They've just made weird. A saga that's vulnerable to pillage, which, you know, that makes sense to me.
You're like, that's all right in my book. It's also not a legend, so you could actually just kind of like try to pop off with a bunch of them if you want.
Yeah, I mean, I think the art on it is gorgeous. The name is super cute, right? Obviously, Urza's Saga.
Yeah.
But I think we need to see a lot more to really, you know, figure out why the heck this is an enchantment.
There's a lot going on in this card, and it will be interesting to... Because this is a preview of like what I guess we can expect in Modern Horizons 2, which is cool. This is a very different thing.
Yes, absolutely. Something, I don't know if we've ever seen an enchantment land before.
I don't think so. This is all very new territory.
I know that we talked about Adventures of the Forgotten Realm on this as well, but is there anything else on Modern Horizons 2 we want to touch on?
No, that was basically it. They just previewed a bunch of stuff for it, showed us some previews. They were generally very excited. The old border stuff looks cool. I'm excited to play the set. It looks pretty fun.
Oh, actually, I did, and you had this in your notes. It is getting more minorish, but it's getting pushed back a week, right?
Yes. So that is, that was part of like the announcements that they said, just due to COVID and other stuff. They are pushing back the launch of both, the release of both Modern Horizons 2 and Adventures in the Forgotten Realm. Both are being pushed back by a week.
It happens. And it's the state of the world. Like, there's no one to blame for that. We're all dealing with that. So.
I don't think anyone was like too torn up about it. It's like, okay, well, everything moves by a week. Sure.
So the next topic, Adventures of the Forgotten Realm, just true or false, the most anticipated Magic set in the history of the Sparts Scott Vargas household.
I am so excited, Mush. You have no idea. I'm just like, they were talking about all this cool stuff for Modern Horizons 2, and I was like, just give me the Adventures of the Forgotten Realms previews, please.
Yeah. Okay, enough chatter. Show us the cards.
I know. I was like, I was just like, now.
And proof positive that Blake not only listens to the audiences and Magic listens to audience, but clearly listen to Magic FM. We got there, baby. We got our Beholder.
Yes, we did. We got the Beholder. That was like one of the big news. They didn't show us what the actual card looks like. Like, they didn't show us power and toughness, cover to mana cost, or mana value, as the Zoomers say now. We didn't see anything.
I hate that, by the way.
I don't like it either. I don't like it either. I can't call it mana value. It's really weird to me.
Like, I know I'm a boomer, but CMC just works for me. Mana value, it just feels like ash in my mouth. Like, I'm like, ugh. And like reading these cards, I was like, mana value. And I actually just stopped for a second and be like, oh, that's right. That's CMC. Like, and
it's happened to me a lot in Strixhaven, where I just like thought about it again. And I was like, oh, wait, that's not what it means. What I thought it meant. Like, I realized that I was not interpreting it right because I'm so used to seeing CMC.
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess for new players, it makes more sense. That's fine. But it's just hard.
It's a cleaner term, to be sure. But it doesn't. It's the same way that like we never stop calling it the PT, even though it's called something different, right?
Right. Yeah. And how we never stop calling it Type 2, even though some people call it standard
I'm not boomer enough to join you in that one.
We all do that. Gabby, everybody does that. Don't worry about it. Everybody still calls it Type 2, 1.x, 1.1. Oh, it's okay. No. So we're all the same.
But anyway, they did, along with a bunch of other stuff, preview that there is a Beholder coming in the set. They showed the art. It looked really cool. So we had a field day yesterday. We were very excited on Twitter.
It was awesome. And kudos again. They're doing it right. They're doing, like, this is the whole thing. Like, you have a collaboration like this, you have a crossover like this, do it right. And it really looks like they are.
Yeah, so one of the things that I really loved watching that stream is they brought someone over from their D&D side to talk with Blake about the previews and like kind of what to expect. And obviously they had less previews than they did for Modern Horizons 2 because it makes sense. It's a set that's further away, right? But you can tell that like every aspect of all the cards is like really imbued with a D&D magic. Like, it's really imbued with D&D lore. They previewed these basic lands. And the basic lands all have flavor text. And, you know, that's not usually a common thing. Like, lands usually don't have text unless they have abilities. But in this case, the basic lands just had blurbs and stuff that referenced things in D&D. So, like, the swamp was supposed to be, like, the Underdark. Or, you know, like, the island's supposed to be, like, like a cyclone event there was in D&D at some point. So they really just are making sure that every detail of the cards has some D&D element to it.
And I think this, you know, this is a telling thing when, and I know both licenses are held by Wizards of the Coast, but I think one of the, there's huge upside merging, you know, having crossover license events, right? You get to capture both audiences and it could be a great thing, but it's tremendously risky because if you don't get the flavor tone right, you risk alienating another audience, right? And, right. And I think that it really appears from everything I've read on social media. I didn't get a chance to watch a stream. They Wizards and probably even more so because these are both Wizards of the Coast IPs. They're really taking that seriously. And honestly, that's all to the betterment of every Magic player and D&D player out there. It's just the right way to do it.
Absolutely. I think they previewed three cards that were less than rare. Because they did preview Tiamat, which is like a very famous dragon. Basically, it's like it's kind of like a dragon mama. a lot of the evil dragons in D&D come from her, from Tiamat. Here's an example of one of the cards they previewed that I thought did an excellent job with it. So the card is called Power Word Kill, a very famous D&D spell. It's 2 mana, colorless and a black for an instant. That's an uncommon. Destroy target non-angel, non-demon, non-devil, non-dragon creature. So it's kind of like a Doomblade. And in the game, Mashi, this is a really high level spell. Like, this is one of the spells that you learn when you're a wizard and you're like getting to like level 9 magic sort of deal. And it's one of the spells that's just like, the higher you get in D&D, I know you haven't played D&D, but the higher level you get in D&D, the more it becomes about like instant kills and less about just dealing damage. So there's a lot of save or dies, and Power Word Kill is basically a spell where you just say the word kill and then the other person dies.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
But it doesn't. So it's of a certain power level though, right? Like angels, demons, devils, and dragons, apparently. You gotta do something else.
It's a pretty evil magic. And so that's why that's why it has all those clauses of the things that don't die to it. Like the angels, the demons, the devils, the dragons, usually those kinds of creatures will have some sort of immunity. And so you can't just like go around just power word killing everyone. There are some people who are gonna be immune to that sort of thing. So it's a great way to template the spell. It's a really, really powerful spell. It basically kills anything, right? They essentially turn Doomblade into like a Doomblade or an Ultimate Price or something like that into a very iconic spell for D&D. And they put its limitations on it too, which is accurate to like how it works in D&D as well.
That's great. I feel bad for Adventures in the Forgotten Realm coming, what, two sets following a Shapeshifter set. Because there's a lot of shapeshifters in Kaldheim.
You're right.
And it's going to be like, yeah, try again. Sorry, bud.
Power word kill. Nah.
Nah. So we also had Portable Hole, which I love this image of you. Like, it's almost like that, you know, Wile E. Coyote or Bugs Bunny, like throwing the hole for someone to fall through. It's 1 white for an artifact. When Portable Hole enters the battlefield, exile target non-land permanent and opponent controls with converted mana cost 2 or less until Portable Hole leaves the battlefield. I'm not changing the mana value yet.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, I feel you, Mashi. They did a great job with this card. Portable Hole is like the classic joke of... So basically in D&D, what you can create is these things called extra dimensional spaces. And extra dimensional spaces is just like you created like a different plane of existence kind of that is just like temporarily there. So if you make this portable hole and throw something in it, then close it, whatever you threw in there is just no longer in this world. That's essentially what it works. And that works really well with the mechanic exile. So that's basically what's happening here. You're exiling something. You put it in the extra dimensional space. If you somehow manage to bust open the portable hole, like if you use an artifact removal on it, that extra dimensional space would open up again. You'd get the creature back. But it's also a small space, so you wouldn't be able to fit a huge thing. So it makes sense that it'd be something like CMC 2 or less.
I love it. I think it's really, really good. And I actually think, you know, the other, you know, we don't, the D&D flavor is really important, but also I think, you know, the power mechanics within Magic, because this is going to be in standard in Magic, right? Mm-hmm. 1 white for, you know, 2 or less CMC permanent. Why not?
Yeah,
you know, non-land
this is very
obviously
similar to like a glass casket or something like that. It's a little bit cheaper and gets smaller stuff.
Yeah, but it's balanced. It seems good. And you can see if aggro, you know, is an issue. I mean, even with rogues, I wonder. Yeah, because all of them are two or less, mm-hmm. right? Because you're playing Luris, so it gets everything. You know, you could see a place for it. The final thing we got to peek at here was Prosperous Innkeeper. 1 green, 1 for a 1/1 when Prosperous Innkeeper. It's a halfling citizen, by the way. So we get it. We get a little peek at creature types because I don't know that we've ever seen halflings or citizens. Citizens, I think we have. Halflings, I'm not sure if we've seen a halfling.
I don't
before,
think we've seen halflings. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if in Magic's history there is a halfling, but we haven't seen it like this. Like, this is a D&D halfling.
Yeah, and I think we've seen citizen tokens at least before. So
I think so.
When Prosperous Innkeeper enters the battlefield, create a treasure token. Whenever another creature enters the battlefield under your control, you gain 1 life. Talk to us about inns and innkeepers in D&D.
So this one's really on the flavor of like what an innkeeper and also what halflings are portrayed in D&D. Halflings are very much like kind of like joyous, like they are friendly. They often are innkeeps. They're like all about the hearth and they're just like these pretty happy, this pretty happy race in D&D. And also like inns in D&D are just like a pretty iconic thing. You know, you travel around from different places, you manage to get to the inn. That's where you show up to find refreshments, food. That's where you're going to sleep for the night. That's where you're going to pick a fight with random people in the bar if your party is that sort of party. I can't say that. Oh, our party doesn't do that every time. But this is just where you come to get information, side quests, meet up with people that you may have like the main mission with. And so like everything that the Prosperous Innkeeper is doing is very on flavor with it, right? You're getting treasures with them. When another creature from enters the battlefield under your control, so like enters your party or whatever, you gain 1 life. It is all very it's all very joyous.
You seem like very, very fond of this halfling innkeeper persona.
Innkeepers are cool, man. Innkeepers give you information and you just have to tip them well.
But even like this way you describe this, like joyous halfling, like, you know, charismatic, all about the hearth, food, drink, be merry. You seem to be really attached to that.
I don't know. Unfortunately, you can't see the art, but if you're listening to this and at some point you see the art of Prosperous Innkeeper, you'll see it's this halfling that's just kind of like welcoming you. Like, they're like, welcome to my end. They just look so happy.
Do you think you're maybe living with a halfling innkeeper, Gabby?
Maybe. Got little like halfling innkeeper vibes.
Everything you said, I was like, that is so Luis. Like, he's all about the food, the heart. He's super charismatic. Like, wait a minute. Luis is a halfling innkeeper.
You're not wrong about that. You're totally not wrong about that.
this is so much hype. This is going to be a great set. I love what they're doing. I hope this just like, and I don't know if Blake addressed it. I don't think he did, but I hope it's just like, instead of a core set, every year we just have a D&D set and that's our new core
set. They did not
say that would be awesome.
They did not say anything about it, but I bet what's going to happen, what I really hope happens is I hope the set kills it, because I think there's a ton of overlap between people who play D&D and people who play Magic. Like, I did not realize how big that overlap was until I started playing D&D years ago. And then suddenly it was like, oh, hold on. All my Magic friends know about D&D. Why didn't you guys tell me about it? Like, were you withholding? So I think what hopefully happens is people who play D&D get interested in Magic, play some more Magic. The Magic players who like D&D go ham on this set. And then Wizards is like, what do you know? Everybody loved the set. Why don't we make the second set?
Yep. I think it's great. So I hope it does become an annual thing. There was some other kind of more for live play. For those of us who are jonesing for live play, we got this announcement that Sanctioned Magic play in the U.S. will reopen on May 28th. You got to follow all state and store regulations while a live event, obviously. Spell table events are still going to happen. But how do you feel about that? May 28th.
I was surprised about the announcement. Not necessarily because I think it's too early to open, especially because now in the U.S., like, I know you're fully vaccinated, I'm fully vaccinated, I know a lot of states have really gone through a ton of people, but Wizards did kick off the pandemic by canceling any sort of live play for 2 years. So I was just suddenly surprised to be like, oh, you're reinstating Sanctioned Magic on May 28th. That is like a month from now. Okay, that is really soon.
Yeah, it's, I mean, I'm shocked to hear that date too.
Yeah, I was surprised. I don't even think it's wrong. I was just surprised.
Yeah. And there are different metrics for how you determine, you know, right and wrong. And that's a personal decision. I think one of the things that is certainly, I don't want to speak for other parts of the world, in California, in Northern California, in the Bay Area, in my experience, and certainly in Henderson, in Nevada here, vaccines have hit a level where they're accessible enough that if you want one, you can get one.
Yeah.
And I know not, I don't want to get into it. I know not everyone wants one, but so at a certain point, it's like, look, if everyone who wants a vaccine has a vaccine, what's our obligation now? What are we supposed to do? And so yeah. I think for me, May 28th still feels a little bit soon, but not by much.
So I think the reason it was May 28th, Mashi, is because May 28th needed to be the date in order for Modern Horizons 2 pre-release to line up with the reopening of Sanctioned Magic.
That makes sense.
That's why. Because they did say that. They specifically said, hey, this date allows us to let you play Modern Horizons 2 pre-release in person. We are making the online pre-releases still available to everybody. So if you just want to play from the comfort of your home, or you don't have an LGS that you go to, play in our online pre-release, like through Spelltable. But this, I think this is why it was so aggressive. It's because it was this, or there was the next time was going to be Adventures in the Forgotten Realms.
Well, that makes sense, but count me in for Adventures in the Forgotten Realms. That's the pre-release I aim to be going to. I don't think I'm going to go
to Modern Horizons 2, but I really want to go for Adventures.
That's going to be, wow. Live play, Gooby, for Adventures. That's going to be, you're going to be pretty far along, too.
I'm pretty pregnant at the pre-release.
Yeah, I was going to say, pretty pregnant at the pre-release. So,
that's pretty cool.
Let's see, what else did we hit here?
They did have that reopening. As part of the reopening, they did want to do more to support local shops. As you know, local shops kind of took a beating during COVID. That's not surprising. So they have two promotions that are going to start running. The first one starts running on June 18th. And it is, if you go to your pre-release and spend $50 or more of Sealed Magic product, you get an old bordered Fable Passage. And it looks just... it looks mint.
It's perfect.
Really good. So another way to kind of add that old border incentive to stuff, right? And also just kind of support your LGS, buy product from them.
Go out there and do it. Just go out there and do it. You know, small businesses have struggled along, and those that have made it through, go out and support them.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you don't need, this is just a good excuse to do it. You should be doing it anyway. Like, just go out there and support as many local businesses, not just Magic. I'm not talking about your LGS, but just, you know, with the restaurants you're going to or ordering from and everything else, like, try to look at that LG, or LS, I should say, the local store and support them. This is a great thing. This is a great thing to do. And Old Border Fable Passage, wonderful. Great way to do it. So kudos to Wizards for putting that out there. And it sounds like we're also going to get convention edition mystery boosties at WPN stores, which is pretty exciting. Those were a hot commodity.
They are very difficult to find. They were only available through going to conventions for a very small period of time. And these are the ones that have the like playtest cards. If you don't remember what they are, they're the ones that looks like it's printed to look kind of like it was just a piece of paper stuck on the card. But there's some really wild stuff in there, and it's meant to be drafted. Like, these are meant to be draft boosters.
Yeah, and it was wildly popular. I mean, when we were running Magic Fest, GPs, whatever, wildly popular. These things just sold out like crazy. And in fact, we had to start opening the packs for people, because what was happening is people were just getting them for the packs and the drafts weren't firing. And then people who really wanted to play were like, dude, this is awful, right? And, you know, so we actually had a queue where it was like, do you intend to play? Do you not intend to play? Like, we're not trying to like take... we're not trying to make it so you can't buy them because you want to invest or whatever. But, you know, this is the, like, if you are in this line, we're opening the packs for you. You have to play in the event, you know,
it's just
because
such
people want to play.
Right. It's also such a bad experience if you're like signing up to play and then suddenly your whole pod abandons and you're like, okay, cool. Do I not?
Yeah.
Do you I get, not
you,
play?
You get nothing. Yeah. You wanted to play. So it was a whole thing, but a great product. So go again. I love that they're doing this through the WPN stores. Go out there and support your local game stores and check out some convention mystery boosties. I wanted to get through all that because I really want to talk about this. I'm super excited about it. They also announced this Mirror Mirror event, Gabby.
Yes. So they did a few announcements for like a couple of arena related things. One of them is for this event called Mirror Mirror that doesn't have a set date yet, but it is going to happen in July sometime. We don't know exactly when. And basically it's like, what if we took the stuff that was really broken, but we did got our second chance on it? That's the best to describe it. So like, what if Oko wasn't as broken as it is, and instead we changed it dramatically so that it was more balanced? Or like, what if Teferi, we changed stuff about it so that it wasn't so broken also?
How would you, if you give R&D a second bite at some of these key cards that got banned because they were OP, maybe Uro, Oko, Teferi, Once Upon a Time, all those things, how would they rejigger it so that the card worked? I love this idea. And can I tell you why, Gabby?
Sure.
I'm going to tell everybody why. I think there's a good chance. So there's a really good chance that, and this is, Historic is in a shape right now where it's just a digital only format. That's it. It's not going to be a paper format. They've done too much to inject this card, that card in there through the anthology process. By the way, Historic Anthology 5 coming out. Woo! Yeah. But what I kind of see happening, what could happen, I don't know, is we have this mirror event. Blake is saying, hey, tell us if you like these things. We'll do more of them. So everybody play in this, please, because I'll be playing in it because I want things like this to happen. Because what I could see happening is they make Historic, just Historic, an online-only format where they change Magic cards because it's an online-only format. You never play with paper cards.
I see what you mean.
So they start – and I've been a fan of this idea for a while, where they kind of digitally doctor different things, fix different mistakes, and change cards that they can't do in paper. But if Historic's a digital-only format, why not? Why not do it there?
They've definitely put Historic in a spot where I can't imagine Historic being played in paper. Like, it could happen, yes, but I really don't see it. So, yes, if there's any format where you could do this, it would be Historic.
And I think it would be awesome to see a separation between paper Magic and digital Magic in this regard, in a format that's not being played on paper, that's not really super practical. Yes, if there were GPs and Pro Tour, there we go. If there were Magic Fests and I don't, what do you call a Pro Tour now?
I don't call it anything. Mythic Championship? I think it's a Mythic Championship, but I just call it the Pro Tour.
Yeah. If there were GPs and PTs in the Historic format, we would all know the ban list. We would all know what cards are in. That's true, right? Because that's the nature of competitive Magic and those of us who follow it. But right now, it's total hodgepodge. I love the idea of Historic being an online-only format with cards that are in their digital form only, that don't exist in paper Magic. And I think that would be great. And you know what? You know what happened if that was really popular? Wizards would start printing special edition foils or inserts with the, you know, digital versions of them eventually.
The digital version, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like they'd print that 6-mana Oko or whatever. But I think that I'm just super excited at the idea of an online arena only format with quote unquote fixed Magic cards in it. And I think this is such an opportunity for them to do that.
It's really cool because so I've gotten more into Hearthstone Battlegrounds over the last 2 years maybe, or like year or so, partly because you can play on your phone. I mean, this is part of the reason we were talking about why it was so big to be able to have Magic on your phone. But one of the things that's really cool about that game, Mashi, I know you haven't played it, is that they will basically print all the cards at different tiers. Like a card will be a 1-drop, a card will be a 2-drop, a card will be a 3-drop. And then they'll pay close attention to what's going on in the meta. And because it's all digital, because it all happens online, they get to a point where they say, okay, well, we're rebalancing. We're switching this one to be a 5-drop instead of a 4-drop. We changed this one so the stats are a little bit bigger. Mm-hmm. We changed this one so that the reward when it dies is a little bit better. And it's really easy for them to do these changes pretty quickly because you can tell when the cards are broken. Like, players are very good at being able to tell that. That's the whole point of playing the game, right?
Yep.
And it's neat because instead of being stuck in this meta, which happens to us in Magic all the time, where people are like, Oko's horrible, this is terrible, it's taking forever to ban Oko, why won't they ban Oko? In Hearthstone Battlegrounds, they can just like do those changes really quickly. And then suddenly you're dealing with a new meta and it feels much better to play again. So it would be cool if that was something that could happen for Magic in some way, even if it's just Historic.
Yeah, that's what I know all about the Battleground stuff because A, I follow Kibler on Twitter, and B, my brother Tommy.
Your brother jams, is, right?
Yeah, he's a lunatic about it. So as soon as there's any kind of nerf or change, he's like doing it.
Telling you
like,
about it? Yeah, I mean,
yeah, and he's playing nonstop.
They recently released a new race called quill boards, and quill boards are really strong. And so right now people are just going ham playing with the quill boards because they're the best thing that you can be doing in the game. But it's going to be like a week or two and they're definitely going to get nerfed. Like, it's not a question of if it's, or it's not a question of if, it's a question of when.
When and how, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So get your quill board games in now, because it ain't going to last, everybody. Well, wow.
Yeah, they have like...
Is there anything else?
There were like two other arena announcements. I can just tell them, but they're not really that interesting. The first one is a Historic Anthology 5 is coming out. You heard Mashi and I be ecstatic about the announcement. We're not into the Historic Anthologies, but whatever. Another one's coming. The two cards that they previewed for that Historic Anthology were Vorinclex's Voice of Hunger and Whirler Rogue. They also had an announcement that Jumpstart is coming back to Arena on June 4th. It was on Arena for a very small amount of time last time, so it's kind of cool that they're bringing it back kind of like as a summer thing. So I guess if you're new to Magic, you can kind of get into Magic via Jumpstart. I actually think it's a very good way to get people like who are
totally
new to, like, and get them introduced to Magic in like a pretty new player friendly way.
And I mean, even for the older players, people were loving it. I think it was a really popular thing on Arena when it was live.
It's really cool. So bringing it back makes total sense. And then lastly, they have an event that's coming up right now called College Clash, which is like you pick your college for Strixhaven, and it's like a month long competition, and you can win like styles and different things. Nothing too exciting. That was the rest of the announcements from the stream.
Lorehold for life. Mm-hmm. By the way, I'm firmly Lorehold, but drafting or trying to play Lorehold in Limited is a nightmare. So please don't do that.
Same. I also don't do that. I'm also firmly Lorehold, and like I always draft Trismari or whatever.
Yeah, I always try to draft Silverquill, and I always end up Quandrix. I think like 90% of my drafts have been Quandrix.
Quandrix is pretty good in draft, so you're not doing that wrong by ending up there a bunch.
So wow. We only do these once a month. It goes so quick now.
I know. We did have a lot to talk about today, though. That was cool.
We waited one day and it paid off. Like we were like scratching the dirt trying to figure out what to talk about. We waited for Blake's stream and it was like, oh my gosh, we have much to talk about.
So this is to level with our listeners, this is the thing. Wizards had an announcement like a week ago or something where they were talking about maybe doing Magic NFTs. And both Masha and I were like, do we have to talk about NFTs? And just neither of us wanted to.
Between Huey, and I love Huey, and Channel Fireball president and CEO John Sasso, because I'm in a Slack chat with them. They love NFTs. They just keep talking about them. I'm like,
We just didn't want to talk about NFTs. So we're like, do we have to talk about NFTs? I mean, this was like the news that happened. Yeah. And then luckily Wizards came back with this huge announcement of all the stuff they're doing for the summer. And it was like, forget NFTs. We can talk about this instead.
Yeah. Yay. Thank you. Shout out to Blake. Thank you, Blake. But that does it for this month. You can follow us on Twitter at @MagicFMPodcast. Of course, if you're listening to the podcast, please hit subscribe. We do it every month, so we'd love to check in with you every month. There's a video component. I'm not live on video today, but Gabby is. And by the way, Gabby, I still did the dance. I forgot that there was no camera going at the beginning. I was still doing my dance. I was like, wait, camera's not even on, Mosh. But you can check out the video component. It's on channelfireball.com. We're also on YouTube. You can find the Channel Fireball YouTube channel. You'll find the video component. It's kind of fun. You know, normally we're playing off each other and you can watch us as we talk about things. Oh my gosh. Okay. You can find Gabby, twitch.tv/GabbySparts. You can find her on social media at @GabbySparts across all social media platforms. I am at Mashi Scanlon across all social media platforms. Please support our sponsor, Scry Me a River. Check them out. They're really trying, guys. They need the help. They need the support. Check them out. That's Dennis Stranjack and Riley Knight. They do a podcast called Scry Me a River. Give them a shot. They need the help. And that does it for us this month. We will be back next month with more, positivity and support and magic news. But until then, everyone, as always, please be wonderful to yourselves and be wonderful to each other.
Bye-bye.